I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Fredericksburg, Texas, and we're here with
Doug Lewis from Lewis Wines.
Did you invent your wine world all on your own, or was it a family affair?
I invented it mostly on my own. I had a roommate in college that works with me as my business partner, another winemaker. His name's Duncan McNabb.
What got you started? Why did you take that leap?
When I was in college, I got interested in wines and had a roommate pouring wine at grocery stores around Austin. Brought home the sample bottles, kind of liked one wine more than others, and decided to go out and visit some wineries and found one I liked the wines at more here in the Hill Country. So I volunteered there and got a job. And I worked there for several years while I was in college, finishing school. And last year I worked for them, I started to make a little bit of my own wine on the side.
You're a young pup. How old are you now?
I'm 31 now.
31. So in the course of your lifetime, you have watched a radical evolution in the wine industry in Texas and specifically the Hill Country.
You know, the growth has been pretty crazy. We've gone from, I think when I got into the Hill Country Wineries Association, there were probably 40-something members, and I want to say we just passed 60.
And growing.
And growing, yeah. I mean, that was only a couple of years ago. And there's new tasting rooms up and down. I'll drive down the highway and see a new building going up that nobody even heard of or knew about.
When one thinks of Texas wines, and specifically Hill Country wines, what first comes to mind? You know, what is there a signature wine of the Hill Country?
I think the Hill Country is still kind of establishing what its signature wine is, only because there's so many producers there that there's a lot of people doing a lot of different things. Diversity, I think, in wines and wine style is actually one of our greater strengths. The Hill Country's a landmass is 1.5 times the size of Delaware. So you got a lot of land to work with, a lot of different, probably 15, 20 different river valleys with some sort of mix or combination of limestone, granitic, sandstone-based soils, sandy, clay, you know, a lot of different aspects.
And another variable, like my mom, she lives near Austin, and that's pretty low altitude. And yet you guys, you get some altitude for growing.
Yeah, you know, the Hill Country, you see elevations from as low as like 700 feet, like Austin, all the way up to right around 3,000 feet in certain areas. Our estate vineyard's planted about 1,600 feet. We actually have growers in West Texas, too, that their AVA is between about 3,200 and 3,800 feet. So, you know, those guys are pretty high up there, very similar to some other higher elevation or altitude growing regions.
Take the latitude.
If you follow it around, you kind of closer to North Africa than you are to Southern Europe, you know, the Middle East. My understanding is if you look at temperature and weather conditions and climates in that part of the world, Texas is very, very similar, especially Central Texas. Which is actually pretty interesting because the origins of vinifera, or all the grapevines that we see growing across the world for wine production primarily, are from the Fertile Crescent, Israel, Iraq, Iran, all of that.
You're talking 4,000 years and more.
Or maybe even 10,000, right? So very old varieties that are from a climate that is very much like ours.
Interesting. So today, what do you do best? What grapes are you most proud of?
One of my favorite wines we made is a 100% Tentacao, which is a Portuguese variety people don't know a lot about. Very, very big on Texas dry rosé right now. Not just myself, but a lot of producers have an annual festival, Texas Wine Revolution, where I think the last one was 22 producers pouring 29 dry rosés, all made with Texas fruit.
It's so cool. It's so great to see rosé come back. As you remember when you were in college, it was rosé non grata.
Yeah. You know, I'm not old enough to actually have drank these, but I've done enough homework that, you know, Matus and Lancers, I've heard about these, and White Zinfandel, and kind of the evolution of blush wines. And
they kind of just wrecked the whole party,
yeah,
didn't they?
You know, it's funny. I can almost tell, like, how my customer slides into certain different market groups based on how, like, if I ask them, do you like rosé? If their response is, oh, I don't like sweet, you know, Zinfandel, then I know chances are they're a new world wine drinker. Their area of orientation might have been California wines to start, and definitely probably wasn't Southern France, where they would be more familiar with dry rosé, right? So
it's like poor Merlot. That was sad.
Oh, after sight. Well, you know, it's funny, too, in that movie, like, his favorite wine in his cellar is a Bordeaux that's, like, mostly Merlot, which I think is humorous. I don't know. Some of the best wines I've ever had have been Merlot. You know, so it's hard to give any grape a bad rap. I think what happens is a grape, people get excited about it, and they overplant it in places they shouldn't plant it, or in particular sites that aren't great to make great wines with it, and they don't understand when, you know, sometimes why to plant what grape in what place. And
in your lexicon, what's your number one selling wine? Because that's probably, to a point, the acid test of what works the best.
That's a tough say. It's somewhere between dry rosé and Tempranillo. Mourvedre is fast growing and becoming more popular, but Tempranillo and dry rosé are both things that myself and other producers in Texas have had a lot of success with lately.
To learn more about your wines and your wine world,
come visit. Tasting Room is the best place, but we do have a website, lewiswines.com.
And your tasting room is located?
3 miles west of Johnson City on Highway 290. We're open 7 days a week now, 10:30 to 5. We used to be by appointment when we were smaller, but we finally have a tasting room and a couple employees. You can come by and taste wines whenever you want.
How far from LBJ Ranch are you?
Maybe 10 miles, something like that. Well, there's an LBJ Ranch in Johnson City, and then you're talking about the big ranch.
His ranch, yeah.
So that one, we're probably 10 miles east of there, between that ranch and Johnson City.
So if LBJ was still alive, he'd stop on by. You know that in his Lincoln.
The likely story, likely story. I'd like to think so anyways.
Thanks again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. My name's Doug Lewis with Lewis Wines. Pleasure pouring real Texas wine for you.
Thanks, Doug.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
I wouldn't trade all this for a round trip to the stars. I found myself a sweetheart.
Yes.
We down